Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 40% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herndon deal. Chris Herndon joins me now. Chris, what are you listening to?
That's Ice Cold Ice by the 1980s Twin Cities post-punk band Husker Du, in honor of the ice cold shooting by the Twin Cities basketball team, the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yeah, that was bad. They lose to Golden State, a Golden State team that did not have Steph for much of the game. What'd you make of that?
That was a truly lousy loss by the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yeah.
Like a really putrid performance, I would say. To be at home with more rest and then to have Curry go out. That Warriors team without Curry is not good. And they were struggling to score, you know, in the, I mean, it was a real labor for the Warriors to score in the second half. One of the most honest post-game interviews you'll ever see is Jimmy Butler after that game. He said, well, what'd you get out of this game? Steph Curry's our best player, is what we got out of this game. And for Minnesota to lose that game at home in that setting, like, I don't think it's – like, I think the Cavs had a more destructive loss last night.
Right.
And a loss that's more of a gut punch. But, like, that was just a lousier loss. Like, that was just really bad by them last night.
And Chris Finch, who you like,
I do.
He had some pointed words for Ant after that one. Not just about his play, but sort of about the way his energy and all of that. What did you make of that?
You know, you don't always see that, a coach sort of calling out a star player like that. And on some level, I mean, it's an honest response, but it's also an element of strategery in it, right? And so is that going to get the best out of him or not? That Chris Finch can judge that better than me, which doesn't mean he'll judge it correctly, so we'll find out. I mean, Edwards did have, I think he had 20 points in the second half.
Yeah, but
in the second half. He only had one point at halftime.
Right, yep.
So he had 22 points in the second half. He sort of came alive a little bit in the second half and was started like going to the rack. But he was just settling for a bunch of jumpers, and I thought playing sort of a lackadaisical game in the first half. Barkley called him out for that at halftime, I think, correctly. And Edwards needs to take over the series, you know? If Curry either can't go or is diminished when he plays, the Wolves should still win the series. That Golden State team without Curry, it just doesn't have it. But they can still beat Minnesota if they're not going to show up.
Well, and they obviously don't have it without Curry. It was still Jimmy Butler in the way that he's sort of controlled the pace. Buddy Hield, obviously.
Yeah.
Buddy Hield supplied the points that they needed, and Draymond was really good. They're not scary, but they certainly, I mean, they had, you know, Draymond and Jimmy Butler are paid to do that, and that's what they did, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, Draymond hit all kinds of crazy threes in the first half. Not crazy threes, but for him, I mean, they're crazy.
Right.
My main reaction to that game is that game two of the Western Conference Finals is tonight.
So,
you know,
neither one of these teams can. Is that, would you feel that way if it were Minnesota and Denver that emerge?
You know, I think Minnesota has certainly the ability to beat Denver. I'm just sort of maybe too down on them based on that one game. I certainly think, I mean, they beat Denver last year in the playoffs.
Right.
And their team construction is pretty good for Denver, as Denver will tell you. But I just, I think we love Mike Conley. He's nearing the end here. Julius Randle is the guy who has good games, but you don't really know if you trust him. And so I just don't know how much I trust that Wolves team as you go deeper and deeper, you know?
What, by the way, is
a lot more.
Is Randle up after this year? He's got a player option? What's his, like, what
he's
is the...
Play, he's got a player option for, like, $30 million, yeah.
And then Gobert?
So I don't know which way that's going to go.
And Gobert?
He's got more years. I don't know. I don't have it committed to memory, but he's under contract.
So they redid Gobert's contract before the year, right, Chris?
Is that right? So, okay.
Something like that. He has multiple years left, I think.
So the way that the schedule goes, there's one-day breaks between the first up through games one to four in that series. Then there is a three-day break before game five. So it feels like if Steph, you know, who knows, maybe that will provide an opportunity for him.
If you get to game five 2-2.
Right.
If you're the Warriors, let's just assume you lose game two. Maybe you get a split at home, even without Curry, and you're 2-2 with a best of three.
Two
and you got
playing,
Steph Curry
yeah.
back.
Yeah, is it diminished? Is it diminished stuff though? Here's the question: do you believe they will win a game without Steph? Where they don't have Steph, will they win another game? Where they do one of the, you know, presuming they play more games here without Steph from beginning to end, do you believe they can win those games or will win one of those games?
I think that they shouldn't win a game without Steph in the series, but I'm not going to say they won't.
Right.
That's sort of up to Minnesota. I think if Minnesota plays up to its capabilities, they should not lose to a Warriors team without Steph Curry.
Yeah, so the Warriors were trying all kinds of stuff last night because they were obviously with the diminished lineup. You got a little bit of Kuminga back in there last night. And then you got Pat Spencer running around.
Pat Spencer, creating havoc.
Is Pat Spencer, what Cam Spencer can be for the Grizzlies? I mean, what do you think of the Cam Spencer's future here? They seem to, he's a dog. No, he's not just a dog, he's a grizzly bear. He's a damn grizzly bear.
If you want to see the absolute best case scenario for Cam Spencer, it was on display last night.
Yep.
It was on display last night in the other game. And that was Sam Merrill.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Cleveland.
Former Grizz.
That is the absolute best case scenario for Cam Spencer is Sam Merrill. Which would be great.
Yeah.
But,
which
you
would
know,
be great.
That guy's popping off hitting, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 threes or whatever it was in a playoff game, you know?
Yeah. All right. So there's that one. We move on to the next one, which is, as you said, the bigger gut punch. It was also, let's get your initial thoughts on that game.
I mean, that's one of the brutal, for a game that's not an elimination game,
right.
That's got to be one of the most brutal playoff losses for a home crowd to experience, man. I mean, you're already down one. It's sort of a must-win game. You're missing three key players, including, you know, two of your three best players in Mobley and Cleveland. But, like, Mitchell's having this great game. You're up all game. You're up 14 going into the fourth. You know, they're cutting away to the bench, and guys are smiling and laughing, which, you know, well, why shouldn't they be? And, you know, like, you think, okay, we got this, man. We're going to even this up. We're going to get our guys back. It's all okay. And then to lose that game, in this crazy set of circumstances in the last minute or so, with the rebounded free throw and the right. offensive foul and the steal on the inbounds pass. And then I think Halliburton missed that free throw intentionally. That's what it looked like to me. I didn't hear people saying that, but he didn't shoot it the same way he normally does. And then to get the rebound and pop that three, I mean, that was just this perfect storm of, like, jab, 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 knockout. Like, I imagine people were just stunned leaving the building.
Yeah, whenever there's one of these, and the Duke National Championship game was kind of like this, the Atlanta New England Super Bowl was like this. My beloved Buffalo Bills lost to Kansas City in 13, whatever, like this. They're, like, you go back and you just think, if only this one of these seven different things that happened, if only one of these one things had happened differently, it would have been different. Like, yeah, you have the Mitchell charge, the bad inbounds pass. No one can seem to seemingly inbound the ball these days. That's a perennial problem. Right. Maybe gets Eastlow off the hook. Yeah, the rebound off the missed free throw, and then the three. It was insane. It is also true, though, that it's not just that they were missing their three best players, and that
two of the three best players.
Yeah, they're missing three players. Three. It is also true that those particular players would have caused them to avoid, even if you could just plunked them down for the last minute. With the ball handling of Garland, they wouldn't have presumably have had the turnovers. With the rebounding of Mobley, they wouldn't have. Like, it is a huge gut punch. It's also somewhat traceable to the guys who are missing.
No? Yeah, then the one guy who's left, Mitchell, by the end of that game,
right.
he was not only on fumes, he was
injured.
He was clearly banged up, too. And so he wasn't. You know, and so that was just a rough, rough spot. And, you know, the injuries that these guys have, I mean, you're missing game two when you're already down one. And so it's not like you have some minor injury. Like if it's not some serious ankle injury, like you're playing that game. And so, you know, you wonder about them, those or the turf toe thing. Like, that was not like, oh, we're up, we're going to buy time.
Right.
Like, they needed that game, and those guys weren't playing. So you wonder, like, how, if they're going to be able to play, and if they can, do play, how effective they can be in a game three.
Right. And obviously it goes back to Indiana. So that doesn't feel very promising right now for the
Pacers,
Cavs.
The Pacers you maligned yesterday might be in the Eastern Conference Finals.
That's
for a second
100%.
Year in a row.
I'm a mediocre plus or whatever I called them. Yes, exactly. Yeah. All right, so one of the themes that is emerging is a theme that we've talked about all along, and you've talked about all along, which is if you get to the playoffs, you see what happens, and you never know what's going to happen in terms of health. And we're seeing that right here in these two series, right? Play up before our very eyes.
Yeah, man. That's why, like, my thing has always been, like, unless you have LeBron James on your team, like, my goal is to be a competitive playoff team and then, you know, get there and try to be competitive, you know, and see what happens. And the other thing is just a reminder of, like, these games are awesome. Now, at the end of the night, it didn't feel awesome for the people in Cleveland or
Minnesota. No, but the games are awesome, yeah.
right. And so, like, you know, I just want as much of that as I can get if I'm a fan of a basketball team, you know?
Is this, obviously we had three, quote unquote, we had three teams that won 60 games this year, but it also feels like parity, right? It feels like, it does feel like this is not your father's NBA.
As good as those teams are, and like the Celtics are defending a title, and Oklahoma City's regular season resume is one of the all-time resumes, right? And when you look at record and point differential and, like, everything else, one of the all-time resumes. When you think about your classical vision of playoff basketball, none of the three of them fit the classical definition of the overwhelming playoff teams, in the sense that, you know, SGA is going to win the MVP this year, but, like, no one thinks he's actually the best player in the world. So that not only did none of the three teams have, like, that guy, they don't have, none of the teams have multiples of those guys, right? It's not Shaq and Kobe we're talking about here, you know? And so as good as the teams are, they're more balanced teams that you can envision being beaten in the playoffs, you know, in a way that when it was Kevin Durant and Steph Curry playing together, like, it's hard to imagine that those teams losing, you know?
Right. And it felt once upon a time, even back the Bird McHale Parrish versus Magic, you know, right. the collection right. of stars, Colossus one after the other, and everyone else can play. The Atlanta Hawks can be cute and whatever else, but they're not really going to be relevant when it matters. And it's funny, though, because when I asked John Martin about this, who I just had on, he said, you know, what's amazing is you look at these teams and they all have superstars. Now, some of this is semantics. What's a superstar, right? Whatever.
Right.
He says there's 20 superstars. And I guess you could define 20 superstars. But actually, they don't. Like, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, he's a tremendous player. If you put him on the Wizards, are they a contender? You know what I mean? Right away? Like, I
agree. Yeah.
You know, so... Is Jason Tatum a superstar or is he just a star? Jokic is a superstar. Who else?
Right. Well, Giannis is, and look at that team. They got bounced in the first round. You know, I mean, the idea that the one player who, like, by himself guarantees you a certain, it may just be Jokic right now.
Right. Who's the, the best players in the NBA are Jokic, Giannis, and who's the third?
Probably Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, or it's healthy Luka, you know, or it's Curry, frankly.
It's Curry, frankly.
Like, it's not Curry over 82 games, but a healthy Curry in a playoff series.
Yeah. All right, so tonight we got two more. We got Denver, OKC, and the Knicks, Boston.
Yeah.
Both incredibly compelling. Yeah, right? Yeah, both. Both feel like... I don't know. I guess most must win for the home team.
It feels like if you go down 0-2 as the home team, as Cleveland just did, like, you're not eliminated, but like, you're in bad, bad shape.
Yeah, things are looking dire. All right, Chris, appreciate it. Thanks.
All right, thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. I think this is better, Jeffrey. I like this NBA better than the. Better than the NBA that used to be.
My only complaint with it is the bigger question that I see is, why does the regular season feel like,
well, that's the problem, so different than this?
Yes. I know to a certain degree the playoffs have always been different.
You're 100% right. I mean, there's no question, and it is more true for the NBA than any other sport. Like,
yes,
every other, we got modern medicine in every sport.
Yep.
Right? We got modern medicine in every sport. In the NFL, even though they've expanded to 17, every game matters so much, you just don't have, you know, load management.
Yeah.
You know, it's
The closest thing you get to load management is a team
at the end of the season,
correct,
or whatever else, and you're trying to be healthy.
And I guess
for
you could argue the preseason.
A preseason, yeah. But basically, you don't ever feel like, if you're watching a NFL regular season game, that you're getting anything less than their best. Yeah, that might be a bad game. They might have an off game, whatever else.
But they put their best on the
floor. It's not because they're mailing it in.
Yeah.
It might be because they didn't take their opponent seriously enough.
Sure.
That's possible. The Bills the last few years played the Pats. Pats always kind of give them a little trouble, and you don't feel like... So, but basically, they're doing their best. In the NHL, it's so damn physical that you're just going to get your ass blown up if you're not, like, it's a little, there's a difference there, too. There's a difference between regular
100%.
Season, but it's not as profound. And you don't just show up wondering if Ovechkin's going to play tonight. You don't. You don't show up wondering, am I going to get Sid tonight? Am I going to get Ovechkin tonight? Same to baseball. Baseball, yes, it's a hell of a long season, but...
I mean, there's a scheduled off day here.
There are scheduled off days.
If you're going to see a three-game set, you're going to see your best player.
Yeah, it's not because on a whim they felt an ache that day. Whereas it just feels different. And I really do think the Grizzlies may have been smart. No, not even. Like, they do their fans a disservice when they treat the whole season like an experiment.
Yes.
You know? If they don't care, if it doesn't really matter, why am I paying $180 for a ticket to sit down, whatever it is?
And then also don't chastise me because I'm acknowledging how you're treating
it. It's they're not they're by not playing guys heavy minutes, by sitting guys out routinely, by
playing guys that don't deserve to be on the floor.
Yeah, but rotating guys, whatever. That's what preseason is for.
Right.
Do that. Do it preseason. That's what practice.
That's what the G League's for.
But it's not, it's, this is, you're right, it's endemic to the league. Okay, That part is not, I agree, that's a problem for the NBA. The fact that you've got all these teams, like, I don't think the Knicks are going to win the championship, but it's, you know, you can imagine it in a way that once upon a time, if there were the Lakers of Showtime vintage, you could not, right? You know, or the like.
I mean, to Chris's point, if are you really telling me, like, yes, I agree with Chris that I think Jokic is the best player in the world, but if the Knicks wind up in the finals against the Nuggets, the Knicks have more depth. Like, they're going to have a path to winning.
Or look at it this way. I don't think they're all equally likely to get to the finals, but any of the four teams in the West, I can imagine getting to the finals.
Yes.
I can imagine it.
Yeah.
I'm not, again, I'm not predicting that it's the T-Wolves, you know, whatever, but any of the four in the West, and obviously Steph would have to be healthy for this to happen, but I can imagine them getting to the finals. It didn't feel like that one, let's be honest. The Grizzlies were in the finals. You couldn't imagine them getting to the
finals. No, and I think it is a good thing.
When they were in the semifinals, you couldn't imagine them getting to the finals, even though they made it to the semifinal.
We've gotten to, the last few years, I think the most encouraging thing is we've gotten to playoff series, and maybe the team that you thought was going to win did wind up winning, but more times than not, we've had series where like, I don't know, man. And it used to just be, all right, well, we know who's winning this series, we know who's winning that series, and like we're batting like 80, 90%.
And it does suggest that all you got to do is get in the playoffs and be healthy. And, well, I mean, look at it. You know, Timberwolves, the sixth seed. You know, the Warriors.
We had a 6-7 Western Conference semifinal series.
All right. If you're looking for a new financial institution, Leaders would be the place to look. Leaders Credit Union. They got a location in Bartlett. They got another brand new location in Arlington. But you don't have to do that. Just download the app and you'll see what I see. Which is it's great. It because every dollar is plowed right back into better service, better technology, better rates. You'll discover that if you are irked at your own financial institution for any reason, or whether you need a new home loan or a car loan or whatever it is, check out Leaders Financial, and you'll see what I see. LeadersCU.com/ESPN to learn more. LeadersCU.com/ESPN to learn more. Sam Hardiman joins us on the other side. Jeff Calkins, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history podcast created by me, Professor Greg Jackson. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined by Sam Hardiman. Sam covers the city of Memphis for the Daily Memphian. He joins me now. Sam, before I get to, we got more XAI news. Before I get to that, I had some other things I wanted to ask you about. One is, you didn't write about it, but the Daily Memphian covered the new roundabout at the Crump I-55 interchange. Now, you live downtown. Have you experienced this roundabout? I'm having a hard time picturing it.
I have not yet experienced a roundabout. Since I've lived downtown, the ability for me to like get there has been impacted because of construction. I, as we may discuss, spend a lot of time in Southwest Memphis. And so returning to downtown from Southwest Memphis would be, I think, greatly aided by this roundabout. I personally am not very good at roundabouts. And so I they don't have many of them in New England.
They don't?
We have some. There was one in Narragansett, Rhode Island, which is a few towns over from me that is scary, to say the least. And I once got lost going to a tennis match on that roundabout, and they called me, said, "Where are you?" And it's because I had taken a roundabout turn.
Jeffrey, can we, as a city, can we handle roundabouts? How are we going to be in a roundabout?
Oh, boy.
We don't even do straight very well. We don't handle straight very well.
Listen, I like you. I don't like to pile on, but my instinct says no.
I can't picture it. But then again, I'm totally impaired in terms of directions and things. All I know is for the longest time, I would try to drive downtown on I-240, and I'd end up in Arkansas because the last exits that used to be there are no longer there because there's construction. Does that mean these have been cleared up, Sam? You know what I mean?
I truthfully don't know. I believe so, but I don't know. I, too, have found myself in Arkansas at times.
Yeah, I just end up in Arkansas, just a trip to Arkansas. And that's okay, except for sometimes getting back, you feel like an idiot, and then getting back, there could be a long
there's
line.
There's like a long stretch. Oh, also, like you got to go like 2 or 3 miles before you can flip around.
You got to enjoy a little bit of Arkansas before you do that. All right, well, that's fine.
Well, and just also going back across like that road, like on the 5540 before it splits in Arkansas, that is like the worst pothole stretch, period.
It's a bad pothole stretch. And then coming back across the bridge, it can sometimes be very slow. You can get caught there. You can get caught there. There's a lot of traffic there. All right. Anyway, so that's one thing. Secondly, I saw a ranking. We did a story on our Yelp barbecue ranking. We're number 4 in the country. Jeffrey, did you see this? We're number 4 in the country.
I've not.
Behind Austin, Kansas City, and San Antonio. It goes Austin, San Antonio, Kansas City, and then Memphis, according to the Yelp ratings. I don't even know, Sam, do you even eat barbecue?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Which is your place?
I'm in, it's typically either Cozy Corner or Barbecue Shop. And I get, as a Jewish person, I usually get brisket.
I was going to say, these cities would appeal to Sam because these are, like, everything. My first thought on this is, like, these are brisket cities.
Well, yeah, they San Antonio. Kansas City isn't.
But Kansas City has, like, Kansas City, it's a little different with the sauce, but they have a lot of brisket.
Do they have brisket at Cozy Corner and at the barbecue shop, both?
Yes. They have hot beef at Cozy Corner.
Hot beef?
Which I get.
Yeah. Have you ever had the Corner Shen?
I have had the Corner Shen.
It's good. Corner Shen is good. And then Jeffrey and I would say that we both believe this, that the Rendezvous brisket is actually sensational. Like, I know people say, Rendezvous is overrated. We believe it's so, people say that so often that it's actually underrated. And one of the sneaky great things at the Rendezvous is the brisket. So there's my recommendation for you for today. All right, onward to the news, to the news that you've actually written about, as opposed to the things that I just randomly brought up to ask you about. One is a story that we didn't get to last week, which is some nuggets from the budget. And a couple things. One, we now know, what was the Wanda Halbert screw up and how much did it cost us?
Yeah, so to refresh everyone's memory, a couple of months ago, we at the Daily Memphian reported that the city of Memphis had raised the wheel tax. Okay, they had doubled from $30 to $60 the if you are a city of Memphis resident, what you pay when you renew your tax. Okay, the problem was, from miscommunications between Shelby County Clerk Wanda Halbert and the City of Memphis administration, that tax did not get collected until February of this year, okay? Which meant that the doubling of the revenue the City of Memphis was projecting didn't happen. And at the time when we reported this, the City of Memphis estimated that it had cost taxpayers about $7 million in foregone revenue. Well, I got the proposed budget, and because I'm a weirdo and I love doing such things, I took a gander, and it turns out that the city of Memphis lost $10 million for not implementing this fee, and then the clerk not implementing this fee in a timely manner. And in the city of Memphis, where the budget is, let's just say tight, that matters. And, that's a big deal for taxpayers.
The other nugget that was in that story, as I recall, was there was nothing in the budget for the amphitheater at Mud Island. Is that right?
Yeah. So there are two separate budgets that the city releases every year. One is the capital improvement budget, which is where stuff from Mud Island would be, and then the operating budget. What we were just discussing with Clerk Albert and the wheel tax is in the operating budget. Huh. The capital improvement budget is where all the money for infrastructure for civic projects is supposed to be, okay? And so when I took a look, again, because I love doing these things, for Mud Island Amphitheater, there was no money in this year for Mud Island, and the city of Memphis said to me in a statement, essentially, that we were still looking at the project, it's still an important asset for the community, but there's no money in for it this year. I would also point out, and this is not me editorializing, but it's worth noting, right, that if the city of Memphis were to put capital improvement dollars, which means debt, which means we are borrowing money to issue this to pay for these things, okay? Which means we have to pay it back for interest, just like your mortgage, right? That the city of Memphis would be subsidizing yet another concert venue in the downtown area, okay? We have AutoZone Park. which is primarily a ballpark, but hosts concerts.
Yep.
We have FedEx Forum, which is a NBA arena, but also hosts concerts, right? Yep. And so I would just raise the question to people, as much as the nostalgia for the MetLife Amphitheater exists, and, you know, I wasn't here when there was a show there. I hear it was a rollicking good time. It probably was pretty cool. How much taxpayer money should be tied up in downtown event venues? Is a real question we maybe as a society should be asking ourselves.
The Crosstown Concourse one is not subsidized.
At this point, I've not seen that. I believe that is at this time private capital, as well as what Grind City Brewing is planning up there, which is also not far away from Bud Island Amphitheater.
I saw shows there, and it was it a rollicking good time? It was just honestly, I think there's a general sense that the island is a waste right now, right? That is both a blight on our city and an opportunity for the city, maybe more of the former than the latter right now. So I guess when we say that there was no money in there for the amphitheater, was that a surprise? In other words, I hadn't heard about an amphitheater project. And if there is a amphitheater project, would it be separate from a broader consideration of what should happen to Mud Island? Are they moving along separately, or are they, what's your understanding of all of that?
I would say, you know, there is the idea of a revitalization of Mud Island. I'm not sure where those ideas are at this time. I want to be clear. Yeah. What I would say is the city of Memphis does have $8.5 million in the next two capital improvement budgets for the Mud Island Amphitheater. Okay. So 17 really? Million total. At the same time, that money, you know, what is in future years in the CIP budget is often sort of like, what are the projections for a baseball player in the year 2028, right? They're projections. They don't ever really come to pass, okay? And so at the same time, it would be surprising to me if significant public money were put into the Mud Island Amphitheater and it didn't come as a broad project for Mud Island.
That seems to make sense to me. By the way, just maybe this is getting too much in the weeds. Was there projected to be money in this budget for the amphitheater that then was not, once upon a time, that was not then
yes.
in the budget?
Yes, there was. Yeah, there was. Last year, there was, yes. yes.
Interesting. Okay. On to XAI. I had two stories about XAI. One is that their second data...
We're not going to talk about golf courses? Okay.
Oh,
sorry.
Oh, golf courses. Golf courses was also in the story. Golf courses close to breaking even. What was the story about golf courses? I'm happy to talk about it.
In the story about the long time City of Memphis golf courses, Memphis Public Links, have operated at quite the loss. Okay.
Yeah.
Past couple of years has been $2.5 million roughly. The City of Memphis is projecting in the coming year for that loss to narrow to about $1.1 million. Which is still real money. We're losing money on these golf courses. And sometimes it's more. A lot of it is, and the fiend in me knows this, the City of Memphis's driving ranges have really picked up a ton of revenue. The City of Memphis got more than is projecting now about $900,000 in driving range revenue this year, which, because of the opening of Audubon and the new driving range there, is largely driven by that. And so I just thought that was super interesting and, you know, cool.
How is, because before Nick Walker left, at your urging, I talked to Nick Walker, and he said, listen, golf, he talked with great pride about the strides that they've made with the golf courses across the city. But he also said they should be self-sustaining. That's the goal, is to make them self-sustaining. Do you have any sense of what the path towards making them, this driving ranges has helped? Do you think there's just a general pickup in use and in golf in across the city, or what? And what's the path?
Yeah, I mean, the data definitely shows that there's been a tremendous pickup in golf across the city, right? Like the amount of, I think multiple courses last year, I don't want to say off the top of my head, but multiple courses last year saw record use, okay? And that trend's been continuing. I mean, as someone who's at Audubon a good bit using the driving range, I see a ton of DeSoto County tags in that parking lot, right? So, like, people are traveling to play, you know, City of Memphis courses, right? At the same time, like, the way to really get there, and this has been tabled by the city council a couple of times, so the city council would have to vote on this, is the way to get to sustainability is to raise the green fees,
right?
And that is obviously a non-starter for people. People don't want to pay more. And then there's also the issue of, like, when you raise the green fees, are you pricing a good amount of people out of what should be public golf, right? Are you, because Audubon is obviously the most expensive of the courses. I think with a cart, it's now $65. There's probably room to raise that. And it, you raise at Galloway, you raise at Pine Hill, you raise at Whitehaven, Fox Meadows, et cetera, Overton Park. You start raising these things. Are you lowering demand? Right. And that's an interesting question. And so the path is, would be just obviously like tee times are filling up and that's great, but also it would have to be raising green fees.
I gotcha. All right. Onward to XAI. Story yesterday went up. XAI's second data center, proposed data center, could use enough electricity to power 40% of Memphis. I saw this. I'm a sort of alarmed as a citizen. Do we have that much extra power? And then I read the piece basically saying that MLG&W hasn't really even begun to study this and would not simply siphon all that power off to XAI at the expense of the citizenry. Is that the understanding? What's happening here?
Yeah. And so this is XAI's second data center, which is in Whitehaven. It's at 5420 Tulane Road. I mean, what a couple of shots away from Whitehaven Golf Course, if you're so inclined. And what's happening here is that they're going to build this second data center, and they've been in discussions with Memphis Light, Gas, and Water for how much power that data center is going to need. And the upper end of that projection, which I would say from my reporting is going to be very likely to be true, is 1.1 gigawatts, which means 1,100 megawatts. For context, for people listening to this, on the hottest days that we've had or the really, really coldest days that we've had, Memphis Light, Gas, and Water's total demand is 3,500 megawatts, okay? On a day like today, we're probably hovering around 2,000 megawatts because it's cloudy, not getting a lot of AC, temperature's not very hot, right? And so, but to be clear to people, Memphis Light, Gas, and Water and utilities across the country have, from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, essentially mandates that preclude, you can't just add stuff to the system, the broader electricity system, right, without studying really hard what is that going to mean for reliability of the general system, okay? So you can't just hook up a giant electric user and say, oh, we'll figure it out, and most days it'll be fine, but we might have blackouts when it's, you know, gets to 95 degrees. You can't do that. Like, that literally endangers people, right?
Right.
And so what is the solution? There's going to have to be a solution here. And the solution, you know, is where does this power come from? Because it is very likely, as Doug McGowan said to the city council yesterday, MLGW and TVA, because TVA, the Tennessee Valley Authority, is the ones providing this power. Memphis Light, Gas, and Water does not generate a watt of electricity on its own right now. Okay, so it's really how much power does TVA have available? And it's very likely TVA does not have enough power available. And so there's going to have to be a solution. And as we've talked about before with XAI and the Giant Colossus series we've done, I would encourage people to go to our website and read it. Because long-term, for these AI data centers to work, right, and in this, you know, geopolitical competition we're having with China, as we as a country are having with China, there is a need for more nuclear power in the United States. That doesn't mean there's going to be a nuclear plant anywhere in the Memphis metro area. You don't put these things around people for a reason, okay? But old TVA nuclear sites are in play here, and we've reported that, and people should be thinking, like, a much broader regional level about where this power is going to come from.
And then finally reported that they have removed some of the temporary use turbines from their original site. What are the circumstances there? And does public pressure have anything to do with that?
I would imagine that public pressure has something to do with the fact that we know about it, the fact that it's being advertised, right?
Yeah.
But I would not say that, like, and we reported this at the Daily Memphian, and this is, you know, I don't want to denigrate other media, but this is why you should pay for a subscription, because we have been reporting for months that this is temporary power. And the plans for how XAI was going to use these turbines down at Paul R. Lowry Road, which is in southwest Memphis in the Pigeon Industrial Park, they relied on Tesla megapacks, which are battery storage, and these natural gas turbines to power the supercomputer while they've waited to connect to MLG&W and TVA. A couple of weeks ago, they connected to the first substation from Memphis Light, Gas, and Water. And so now they are receiving 150 megawatts of power from MLG&W. And they're generating 150 megawatts of power on their own, okay? And so over time, when that second substation, which is being built, and if you drive down there today, you can see it being built, literally with your own eyes, these turbines will go away, and there will be some turbines on the site as backup power. So when it gets really hot outside and really cold, XAI will come off the grid and they will use these battery packs and they will use the turbines that will remain on the site for power. And so that is the plan, and so that it is not endangering Memphis residents, okay?
Yep.
And this company has said that they are willing to come 100% off the grid. We've reported at the Daily Memphian that other industrial users don't come off 100% off the grid, and that TVA, which has a program that incentivizes big industrial users to come off the grid, we've reported that TVA won't even release who comes off the grid, okay? Mm-hmm. And so we have an extra amount of information regarding XAI and their demands. We don't have a lot of transparency into other super large industrial users around this area. And I just want to point that out for people.
Thanks, Sam. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, we got to take a break. Sam Hardiman from the Daily Memphian. Back in a moment, Jeff Calkins, 92.9 FM ESPN. Hey, Mother's Day. It's bearing down upon us. So whether you got a mom, whether you got a stepmom, whether it's a dog mom, whether it's a grandmom, whatever moms are in your life, get yourself to Robert Irwin Jewelers and take care of your mom with some diamonds. 2-carat lab-grown diamond stud earrings. This is kind of amazing at Robert Irwin Jewelers. Only $7.99 while supplies last. The To the Moon gift set, that includes a To the Moon and Back pendant. I love you to the moon and back. That's a lovely sentiment for your mom. That, the pendant, and the 24-carat gold-dipped rose, only $199. They even have a diamond paw necklace for $119. That's just the start of the ways you can make a mom in your life happy this Mother's Day. Free financing, 12 months, 0% interest, or take up to 60 months to pay. Of course, it's got 5 convenient locations. I go to the one right across from Novel on Perkins Extended. Find the one closest to you. It's Robert Irwin Jewelers, rijewelers.com. Did get Jeffrey an independent thumbs up for Sushi King.
Okay.
Has come in. A John out there, I won't say his last name because he didn't authorize me to, says different John, not John Martin, says Sushi King is great. So I certainly don't mean to disparage Sushi King. I think I'll get myself to Sushi King at some point. What is coming up next?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Jason Fitz will join their program at 11:25. Coach Hurd joins them at 1:25. Cobb will be with me today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. CJ Hurd's going to join us during hour number 2. Cobb will also be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow for now. Work is done.